Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Good Saturday morning to you. Hope you're having a good weekend. Beautiful, beautiful weekend. A little warm, but hell, it's July. What do you expect? 101 with Greg Pogue right here. Roy's Meat Service at East Nashville presented by Freeman Webb. Our guest is, this is cool, Davis Nolan. Everybody loves him. Everybody likes him. They like him and love him. That's a nice combination. Davis, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, and it's so great to be here and to see you again.
Yeah. Just back from Japan?
Yes, I am.
Are you still in the, do you know what time it is in your body right now?
I'm totally upside down right now. Like the day after I got back, I slept till like about noon.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you're waking up in the middle of the night. Jet lag is a lot of fun. Now, my wife is Japanese.
Uh-huh.
We've been married for 28 years. And so one of the reasons I retired back in August is I had some family things to take care of. Besides the fact I was 71 years old, and it's like about darn time, right? And anyway, my brother in Pensacola had some medical issues. He needed my help to house sit while he went and took care of that. And my wife's mother-in-law was my wife's mother was going into assisted living at the time. She's passed away since then. But anyway, so we had a lot of family things. She had to be in Japan. My brother needed me. So it was time for me to retire. So I've been to Japan three times since August. I've been to Pensacola, Florida, like four times.
Yeah.
Where I did a little fishing, by the way.
Good.
And so I've been since August when I retired, last year.
August 22nd.
Yeah, pretty good.
Well, that's the internet. It's a wonderful thing.
Well, I've been so busy that I haven't had a chance to really get bored, which is a good thing.
44 years, my gosh. I didn't know they would hire. It had to be child labor laws when they hired you, right, and everything.
Well, but I was in my 20s.
Yeah, but just that run, man.
Well,
44 years, and it was just joking off air. Mike Oregon was here last week. Mm-hmm. He's coming up on 42 years with the Tennessean. So that's 86 years between you two.
No, let's add you in there.
I don't know I'm not retired. I mean,
Okay, well, but I mean, as far as experience is concerned here and all this.
But that we were talking, you never retire.
Yeah. No, well, I'm still really busy on social media.
Yeah.
Channel 2 has allowed me to keep my WKRN Davis Nolan Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm media savvy or social media savvy, but at the same time, changing it from the WKRN to my name, I'm scared to even touch it, you know?
Yeah.
And they said, just leave it alone. We don't mind you being on there. You're our meteorologist emeritus. And so that was nice of them. And I've got still have my Twitter page. I'm not going to call it X. I'm just going to call it Twitter because I can't change. I have a hard time with change. But anyway, Channel 2 was I went through a lot of ups and downs. And I get asked all the time by people in the media, like, how did you stay at one station for that long? Because most people, managements change, and they come in and they want to change everything.
Consultants.
Right. Exactly. We love them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they tell you all about your market that they have no clue about.
Yeah,
but anyway,
they're living in Baltimore.
Yeah, and they get paid all kinds of money for some reason. But anyway, the answer to that question is, how did I survive for 44 years? Well, I was chief meteorologist the day I moved here. The day I moved here, the general manager that hired me got fired. A few weeks later, the news director, of course, was gone.
Yeah.
And they're saying, well, we want to change the sports and the weather guy. Well, I just got here. You know, they already didn't like me. So, you know, it ended up, I agreed to do weekends. Oh, really? They think I'm going to tell them to go somewhere and move on to some other market because I was young and I could have done that. But I wanted to live here. And so I'm fine. I was single, didn't have any worries. And so I agreed to do weekends. So I did that until Tom Seiler was gone. And
good Lord, Tom Seiler.
Yeah, then they hired me to be chief meteorologist again. I'd been doing weekends, and we had a news director come in that liked me, and he had interviewed all kinds of people. And I said, well, everybody knows you, and you've got a degree in meteorology. Let's just have you do it. Fine. Did that for another 10 years. Then another management came in. They say, well, you know, we want to make some changes here, da-da-da-da. Well, I'll do weekends. Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, so how did I survive? It's because I agreed to just do whatever needed to be done. And just when, you know, some general manager thought that he was just going to clean house, we'd have tornadoes come through. And I know Lisa Patton and I were working together at the time. And that would always, we need to keep them together, you know. And then the same thing with Danielle when she came in. So, in put it in sports terms, I agreed to do special teams.
Right.
Okay.
you're a five utility, like a utility player, five tool
right.
player.
Had I not agreed to do that, I wouldn't have been there 44 years. No way.
Yeah.
So anyway, but the last 8 years, maybe 9 years at Channel 2, we had a news director that really loved everything I did. He loved me doing the weather. Of course, I wasn't trying to be the chief meteorologist. I was willing to play second fiddle, and that was fine with me. And then he wanted me to do all these outdoors things, and he found all these great ideas for me to do, the fishing thing and all that. And I just really enjoyed my last, like, almost decade at Channel 2, having a news director that just was looking for things for me to do. And after I did it, he just loved it. And it's so nice when you feel appreciated. You know, it's a really important thing to your job. And I think anybody working in any business, if your upper management and people that are your bosses appreciate everything you do, life is so easy. And I worked my butt off during that time period. But I was having a great time doing it and just retired because it was time, you know.
Why did you work? Not work, why did you go to work? Why you drew so many people in? What about Davis? No, I know why you work. You get a paycheck, you know, this.
I'm sorry, I'm a little slow here.
No, that's okay. But what about you worked, has clicked. Obviously, it had to. 44 years in every role you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. What about you worked in the public eye?
Well, I guess I'd really have to ask the public to answer the question, but I can tell you what I think.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, I just tried to just talk and tell you the weather. And I noticed right off the bat that I wasn't what consultants were looking. You know, the typical TV management, they're looking for a certain thing. And I really wasn't that. But that's what the public liked. They just wanted you to come on and be, you know, just talk. You know,
isn't it? One of us.
The weather's going to be, yeah, be one of us and just tell you the weather. And I do know the hell out of the weather, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing, you know, that I'm very, very confident about, you know, is my knowledge there. And I like to explain not just what the forecast is, but why. And I was able to make computer graphics that were pretty simple to show. You know, there'd be like a low over our area, and all the showers would be going counterclockwise around this low. And I would show you the low in the satellite pictures, and I'd have a map. And then I'd have that map animate how the low moves out by Thursday or so, and then the sun comes back out, you know. And I think people – and I would just tell it, and it, I didn't put on this – an air, you know, or, you know, some sort of like – act.
Yeah.
And I think that's what probably – I think that works in anything, to tell you the truth, for the most part. Now, the new people come in, the consultants come in, they go, you know, we want you to, you know, do this, do that, you know.
Well, and, you know, you're a handsome fella, but you don't look the part, right?
I mean,
yeah, you know.
Right.
And you know that, and from the consultant world and everything. Davis Nolan, our guest, 101 Greg Pogue right here at Roy's Meat Service in East Nashville. Only place you can get, as I pointed out to you, only place you can get night crawlers and Wagyu beef.
Yeah.
In within 10 feet of each other.
Well, I haven't been to Japan. I know all about the Wagyu beef.
Yeah.
That stuff sure looks good over there in the refrigerator.
Yeah, I face all of my guests toward the beer case. I don't know if you noticed.
you got everything there.
And Michael Waltrip. Our partners with the Nashville guy. Oh, I want to mention this. Can I get a 20-second timeout on my own show?
Do.
Thank you very much. By the way, the Nashville Cats are off our playoff game. Semifinal will be a week from tomorrow, 2 weeks from tomorrow, Sunday, August 2nd at 3 o'clock. The game will be broadcast live on 102.5 The Game with Chase McCabe and Big Joe Dubin, who's another – you know, likely sort that, you know, has overachieved.
No joke, like, real well.
Yeah, Big Joe's overachieved just like us all. Mm-hmm. And so I want to mention that. So, yeah, our playoff game, we'll be promoting it on down the line as well. I know you've got this question. This is the obligatory question. What do you miss?
You mean from work?
Yeah.
Just the camaraderie. It's almost like when I hear the football players, because I listen to so much sports talk radio.
Right.
Football or baseball – basketball, you name it, when they retire, you know, they were ready to retire physically and all that stuff, but the camaraderie in the locker room, you know, going to work every day and having all your friends that you're talking to, that's the only thing. I enjoyed the work, like I was telling you, the last 10 years, but you know, just like the ball players say, the camaraderie and the people in the newsroom that you get to shoot the bull with every day and have fun with.
Yeah, did it take some adjustment? I mean, I would imagine after 44 years of that cycle, whatever it was, wean yourself.
I was so busy, I had to go to Japan like right away after I retired. Yeah. And then I had to go back again because my mother-in-law passed away. I went to the funeral, came back, then I went to Pensacola to take care of my brother's house for 6 weeks. Then I came back to Nashville, then I went back to Japan, and I was just so back and forth busy, and you know, traveling and all the things we were doing, that I didn't have a chance to have to go through that adjustment. You know, there's a few friends of mine, we still text each other and stuff like that. So we still keep in touch, and our news director, Albert Tucker, who I was telling you made my life very enjoyable the last 9 to 10 years, he just retired, so I went back to the station for his retirement, and, you know, 90% of the people, there's a lot of turnover in our business, but 90% of the people were still there, maybe 98% of them were still there, and it was really good to see him. So a little adjustment there, but I've been so busy, you know, and been able to text everybody and Facebook or Twitter, you know, instant messages and whatnot.
Insta book.
Yeah. I'm not too good with Instagram. I post on Instagram, but I'm not too good at answering my, you know, people that I don't find my way around on it that well. But, you know,
I want to go a little deeper on just the meteorological component of mm-hmm. how it all evolved and everything. But you mentioned your wife, Amy.
Yes.
Yeah. How'd you meet him? Usually I end the show with this, but you've mentioned it several times. How'd y'all meet?
Well, she moved here in 1988 with Bridgestone. She had gotten her first degree was in piano. She got her master's degree in San Diego in computer design. And Bridgestone, which is a Japanese-owned company, as we know, hired her to be in charge of their computer operations. And then they moved. She had a job in L.A., Los Angeles. And then they moved.
Not Lower Antioch.
Yeah. No, the real L.A. Not that Lower Antioch's not real.
Or Lower Alabama.
Yeah. Anyway, she moved here in 88 with them when they moved their headquarters here. And we didn't meet till the 90s, really through fishing. We had some mutual friends. And her father, who's passed away, but my father-in-law, he would come to Tennessee, and he loved to fish. So through some mutual friends and whatnot, I got to meet my future wife. And so when I would go to Japan, my father-in-law would take me fishing in Japan, and he would take me all over Japan to see literally everything in Japan. And I've learned so much about that country. And the ironic thing is that my father is a World War II, Pacific World War II veteran on the USS Bunker Hill, which was kamikaze. He lived through it. It didn't sink, but that put him out of commission till the end of the war. So he went through a lot of horror in World War II. And when I first got engaged to a Japanese woman, my father was a little taken back.
Yeah.
You know, and you can understand what he went through. And ended up the weird thing, not weird, but he ended up just loving my wife. I'd go to New Orleans, and I'd go out to visit my friends. My wife said, I'm just staying home, talking to your father. And they'd talk for hours. And they got to be so close.
Yeah.
It was like a healing thing for him, I think. So that's just a little side story.
That's what we do here.
Yeah.
A daughter?
Yes.
Amanda?
Amanda Nolan, yes. She's now 26. And she's... Talk about social media. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Is she here still?
She's in Japan right now.
Oh, okay.
Okay, but she's back and forth, okay? She'll be back in August for about a month, and she's helped my wife out quite a bit over in Japan because, you know, my wife went through losing her mother, and we had so many things to do over there, and my daughter's been a big help with that. And plus, everything she does, she can do anywhere in the world. It's all online.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to YouTube – or TikTok, that's the place to find her. She calls herself Amandum, Amanda Dumb. Okay, she's got a sense of humor. I'll give her credit there. But her big thing now, she started off doing these a cappella things with like 8-part harmony, and she'd spend days doing those. And she got, like, by the time she was out of Vanderbilt, she got 600,000 followers on TikTok. And then one day she said, what if so-and-so's song was sung in Japanese? And she just took a song and sung it in Japanese. It took her 5 minutes, okay, instead of like 3 days to mix all this stuff. And she got people fascinated by that. So now she does, that's her niche. She takes a popular song and sings it in Japanese, okay? And what impresses me even more, since I played music it myself, is that because of copyright law and stuff, she started to literally play all the, her own music. In the beginning, she was using karaoke and just singing along, and now she's literally programming and playing all the music on a keyboard, and plus she's got software that has every sound known to mankind, which every musician here in town knows about. It's common knowledge to these kids now. But she does a good job of taking a song and literally having to convert all the parts onto her software, okay, play it, and get the music done, and then sing it in Japanese. And that's her niche right now. And she's pretty darn good at it.
Davis Nolan is our guest. We are at Roy's Meat Service 101 with Greg Pogue. More with Davis. Oh, by the way, Jake Steigelfest back in the 94.9 studio, as always. Great job back there. More with Davis when we come back. 94.9 The Fan. 101 with Greg Pogue, presented by Freeman Webb, Roy's Meat Service, East Nashville, every Saturday morning. By the way, in about another month, we'll keep doing this, but we kick off for the 15th year Prep Football Talk with Coach Bubba Spears and myself. We've been doing it 15 years. Bill Freeman, now Bob Freeman, have supported that from day one, so we'll be kicking that off. And there's also some other news coming down the road here in a few moments. Not today. Davis Nolan, our guest, 44 years at WNGE / WKRN, retired about a year ago as well. You're from New Orleans, right? Mm-hmm. Tell me about growing up. Tell me about your family, mom, dad, brothers, sisters. Tell me about growing up in New Orleans.
Well, the biggest misconception people have is they come to New Orleans, and naturally they're going to be in the French Quarter, stay in downtown in a hotel and see in the French Quarter. Well, people from New Orleans, I don't say we never go to the French Quarter, because we do, but that's only for a special occasion, you know. I mean, I was down there. My father and my brother and I both graduated from high school. We both got to eat at a 4-star restaurant downtown, you know, in a French Quarter.
Yeah.
You know, but other than that, you know, I grew up out towards the lakefront. That's north of the French Quarter, going out towards Lake Pontchartrain. And we raced sailboats. And did that a lot. And most weekends, I was out on Lake Pontchartrain. And I also liked to fish, but I did most of that. My summers, I spent on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, where our great-grandfather had built these two houses right on the water in Long Beach, Mississippi, which is right outside of Gulfport. Lost that house in 69 from Hurricane Camille. I've been through lots of hurricanes before, but that one was too much. Of course, Katrina, 30-some-odd years
later. Well, Camille and Katrina are on the Mount Rushmore of bad.
Yeah, nobody thought that anything could be worse than Camille on the Mississippi Gulf Coast.
Yeah.
The benchmark for Camille was like in the 20 to 25-foot range from our house westward to Bay St. Louis, where the eye went across. Katrina beat that by almost 10 feet, but our house was gone by then, obviously. But anyway, back to New Orleans. You know, I grew up in the Lakeview area, ended up in what's called Lakewood South, which is not far from Lakeview area, and I spent most of my time on the water. And a lot of my friends lived in what we call Uptown, which is where Tulane University is and Loyola University is, St. Charles Avenue, Carrollton Avenue, that area that a lot of people that have been to New Orleans know. But the big thing is, you know, I've talked to people and said, man, I went to New Orleans. You grew up there? I said, I didn't grow up on Bourbon Street, dude.
Yeah. Okay. Not in the Quarter.
No. And you know, the Quarter is a great thing, don't get me wrong, but it's just that's what the tourists see. And most people that are from New Orleans don't live in the French Quarter. And they live in a more...
Like Metairie and Kenner and Slidell and on, right?
Yeah, we were still in Orleans Parish, which is New Orleans, but we were like right on the edge of Metairie, actually. And I had a lot of friends in Metairie and on the other side of the West Bank. But, you know, the growing up in New Orleans is so different than what people see when they come there and go to the French Quarter. Now, don't get me wrong. It's still a partying city, even for the people that don't live in the French Quarter. It's a little bit more.
Oh yeah,
you know,
you don't have to go to the Quarter to find a party in New Orleans, right?
Exactly.
Tell me, your dad. You mentioned him earlier. What did he do?
He was an architect, he did have a office downtown, the Pere Marquette Building. For anybody that's from New Orleans, he did architecture. He was self-employed. He didn't want to work for. He'd worked for a corporation or two when he was right out of college. And he just didn't like that. He also saw the politics involved of having to pay politicians to get a job and stuff like that. And so he just worked on his own. And he had a reputation. His father had been pretty well known as a businessman and was very respected as being honest and trustworthy. And it got my father a lot of business. And he did pretty well as an architect. My brother and I both went to Jesuit High School in New Orleans. So did my father and his brothers. when they grew up and across the river in Algiers, took the ferry boat across the river to New Orleans, to downtown where Jesuit used to be located. And then, of course, my brother and I went there later. And Jesuit's sort of like the high school Notre Dame type thing. It would be like going to Father Ryan here, you know, or Pope John Paul II, you know, and, except it was all boys, no girls, unfortunately. And but, you know, they were you got a pretty good education there. And then my brother and I both went to Tulane afterwards. And then I started off majoring in music there, ended up getting a geology, earth science / geology degree. But I was really only interested, as far as my college degree was concerned, in meteorology.
So where did that, where was the genesis of that?
I mean,
I'm going to say weather, okay, just in a larger generic term. Where did that bite you?
Well, from sailing and from fishing, you know, being out in the weather. And growing up in New Orleans, for anybody that's listening that's from New Orleans, that's old enough to remember this, there was a fellow who was the pioneer of weather broadcasting in New Orleans. His name was Nash Roberts. And he's passed away now, obviously, but he brought people through so many hurricanes in New Orleans and was the first guy on the air in New Orleans. My father tells me the story. WDSU had signed on the air, the NBC affiliate there, and people don't know this, but my father explained that used to be you only had a network, a national news thing for 15 minutes. Then later on, they started to add these local news shows, where they'd have a local news thing. And then the new thing became to add a weather guy, and then even sports eventually, as you know. And they said, well, who are we going to get to do weather? Well, Nash Roberts owned a company that forecasted for the oil rigs, the oil business, which is huge, of course, in Texas and Louisiana, offshore. And he forecasted for not only the oil companies, but all the service rigs, all the people that had the service boats and helicopters and everything that flew out there and rode all the equipment and the men and everything you needed. They needed to have a marine forecast daily, 24/7. And he was, obviously, that was what his thing was. And so they asked him, you want to do this TV thing? And he was like a bald-headed, sort of pot-bellied man, like me, except I'm not bald. And he sort of had a sinus problem, and he sounded like this. And he was like, no consultant would have ever liked this guy.
Yeah.
But he just came on and told you the weather, and maybe that's how I learned how to just tell people the weather. And he would explain it. He would, the old-fashioned, he had a felt tip pen. He'd draw the cold front in the map. He'd say, okay, this front's in Houston right now, and you got a line of storms with that front, and that's going to come through here by tomorrow. And when that comes through, the winds are going to go from the south that they are now, or in the warm, and then they're going to shift to north. He'd draw the arrow from the north, and that front will come through here tomorrow afternoon. We'd be out in the lake racing sailboats and go through this wind shift. All of a sudden, it gets cold. And everything he told us yesterday with a pen on a felt tip pen.
How did he find that information? Technically.
Well, the Weather Service is always, before, we didn't have computer models back then, okay? And this is, of course, I'm just a kid, but I know this, you know, now that I'm older. And you still had weather data, and you still had, the National Weather Service would still draw a lot of surface maps and upper air maps that you'd get the data from the Weather Service, okay? So the National Weather
Service. Like over a teletype?
Yes. The teletype, exactly. That's how he got the raw data as well as data that would be a forecast type data. But he took the raw data, and he had employees that would, you know, draw up their own surface maps and upper air maps, and then they try to project things in the future using a lot of techniques that people used before computer models came along. Of course, you didn't try to do a 7-day forecast back then because that was impossible. But you could go out a couple of 3 days, and he had to tell the oil rigs to evacuate for a hurricane. Many times they had to have a 3-day notice. It's not easy to just take the entire oil industry and move it off those platforms out there. So he'd have to tell people, and I'm sure there were many times he had to evacuate them, and the thing went the other way. But he was always, you know.
So what, for you, when did it click, this is what I want to do?
Okay, well, growing up, I always tell people that when I was growing up, you know, I saw the Beatles and heard the Beatles, and it was just like, I got a guitar, and that's, and there was only two things I loved. It was playing that guitar and singing and doing music, but I loved weather, too. So all through college, even when I was at Florida State majoring in meteorology, I was still playing a guitar and singing in bars and clubs around Tallahassee. There was one of the local rock bands used to let me get up and play during their breaks. because they would play the rock music. I did acoustic songs by Led Zeppelin, all the acoustic stuff. Jethro Tull acoustic stuff, Moody Blues.
So you do Aqualung, My Friend, Don't You Start Away Uneasy, well, the Locomotive Breath.
Yeah, the acoustic middle part, you know, Sun Streaking Cold, you know, that part.
Don't You Start Away Uneasy. Yeah, don't worry. Yeah. Jethro Tull is one of my favorite. Go ahead. That's my rabbit hole right there.
Me too.
Yeah. But, again, was there a switch that went on, or was it a gradual thing that this is what I want to do?
Well, I went to Florida State. I went there in the fall of 76, and the Hurricane Hunters had landed a plane there trying to recruit us, right? And they're out of Biloxi, you know, and you know, I know Biloxi real well, you know, in Mississippi. So I was thinking about doing that because I figured I want to play music, and the Hurricane Hunters are actually with the Air Force Reserves, and they're part-time. So you have most of these guys have a full-time job elsewhere, and they fly so many missions a year. And I thought, well, I can do two things at once. And then all of a sudden, the local TV station, Channel 6 WCTV, the CBS affiliate in Tallahassee, they didn't have any weekend news yet, and they wanted to start up weekend news. So there was no videotape. You didn't send a videotape, much less a link, like kids send a link now so the news directors can see it. No, there was no videotape, and they had film that they chopped up with, you know, razor blades. But to really hire somebody back then, I guess you just had to audition them. So they told us that if anybody wants to come out and audition for this, you're welcome to do it. And I went out there along with several other of my meteorology friends, and then people from the drama department were going out there. You know, people that were actors and stuff were going out there. And I ended up getting the job. And, of course, I'd watched Nash Roberts growing up and really loved, you know, what he did. And that did appeal to me. And having played music in front of, like, a lot of people, you know, I didn't have as much stage fright as maybe somebody else might have had. So that's how that all evolved and the game came about. And so I got the weekend job at WCTV in Tallahassee, and I still played music, still was doing it, and on the side. And then I got the call from a famous person in Central Florida who's passed away now, Roy Leap, who was a god of meteorology in Central Florida and Tampa. And he asked me to come work for him. So I went to Tampa for about almost 2 years. And then I got a call from a news director here in Nashville who apparently somebody told him about an up-and-coming meteorologist down in Florida that might be what you're looking for. So they called me and hired me, asked me if I wanted to move to Nashville. Well, I had all my musician friends tell me, oh, man, you need to move there. And even though I didn't play country music at the time, you know, they said, don't worry, there's rock, a lot of rock music going on there. There's jazz, everything's there. So I came here, and I never made my living playing music, but I messed around with it a lot and had a fun time. And I always tell people that there were only two things that I really loved, and that was playing music and weather, and God let me do one of them for a living and have a great time doing the other one.
Davis Nolan is our guest, one-on-one with Greg Pogue, presented by Freeman Webb. We are at Roy's Meat Service in East Nashville. More with Davis when we come back. Let me tell you about the Boulevard Bar and Grill down in Murfreesboro. First off, it's where the MTSU radio coaches shows are. Chip Walters does the football, men's basketball. I host the women's basketball. Of course, do the women's basketball play-by-play down there. 2154 Middle Tennessee Boulevard, BoulevardMurfreesboro.com. Daily specials. $10. I mean, their Wednesday smash burger is a double bumble, and you can't go to McDonald's for $10, okay? Fish and chips, all that. They got Italian night. They got nacho every Saturday. 60-ounce domestic pitchers of beer. And this is the cool thing. They have a dogs on the patio menu. You can bring your pet. You have to go outside on the patio. They have a menu for the dog. It's not Alpo. You can actually order chicken, whatever stuff, to feed your dog on the patio. That's the coolest thing. Jeff Neble, Leah, and Tay, great people there. Boulevard Bar and Grill. Davis Nolan is our guest. More with Davis coming back right here. This is 94.9 The Fan. Must be the Darlings from Andy Griffith.
Sounds great.
A little bluegrass music. Davis Nolan is our guest. 44 years, the meteorologist, WNGE, and then WKRN. Bob Mueller's in that range too, right? He's 40-plus.
Yeah.
Put that up just a little higher.
I hint that at him every once in a while. Like, Bob, are you next?
Yeah.
And he has to keep his mouth shut on that. But, but he's still doing so well. I mean, and his political show that he does, he can ask anybody, and they'll be there.
The mustache ask.
Yeah, and they're there. And it's a good show.
You mentioned Doppler.
Yes.
Was that the game changer?
Yeah. My boss asked me to do one of the stories I did last year. He said, I want you to do a story on what was the, in your career, the biggest, change in your career that came along. And the next red Doppler radar, when the National Weather Service implemented that, it was in the mid-90s, it just changed the world, okay? Because to spot a tornado, you need to have what the winds are doing. Well, that's what Doppler does, okay? The old radars, which the new radars still do, show you where it's raining and how hard, and they tint all the different colors, red being heavy rain, blah, 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 But it didn't tell you anything about the winds, okay? And so you really couldn't very well spot tornadoes unless you had what we called a well-defined discrete supercell, which is those fan-shaped objects with the little hook in the corner. But many of our tornadoes, most of our tornadoes, are just embedded in a line of storms, and there's no necessarily hook. It's just not obvious. So when we came along with the NexRed Doppler radar, which is showing you what the winds are doing within a thunderstorm, you could spot tornadoes. And I think I can do this pretty quickly. People say, well, how does Doppler work? And since we have the time, I hope.
No, we got to 11 o'clock. Well, take your time.
You always tell us, we always tell you, you see the greens, they're the winds towards the radar, and the reds are winds away from the radar, okay? So the Doppler effect is also present in audio, in sound. And when you hear a train go by, or let's say you hear a truck blowing its horn, the sound goes down like that, okay? Why does it go down? Well, because the truck is moving away from you, and the frequency goes lower and lower because the little sound waves are getting to you slower and slower because the truck's moving away from you at a certain velocity. Well, that change in that frequency, where how far it goes down, is proportional to the speed that truck is going away from you. Now, you should hear it when it's coming towards you. Problem is, it's going so fast, you usually don't hear the sound till it's right there. If you could, you'd hear it coming up as it approaches you. But usually things go by us, that's when we hear it. So anyway, that's audio. Same thing in the radar. It sends out a pulse of energy, okay, electromagnetic wave, and it hits the raindrop or the cloud droplet, bounces off of it, and comes back to the radar. They send it out at, let's say, X amount of, certain frequency X. Well, when it comes back X plus, higher than what you sent out. And if it's higher than what you sent out, it meant that droplet was moving towards you. If it's lower, it meant it was moving away from you. So it, and then the computer, generates this. It's actually the component of winds towards and away from you, okay? So when you have red, which is winds going away from the radar, right next to greens, which are winds going towards the radar, and if they're oriented the right way, and you see, that means that you're seeing two sides of a circulation that would be counterclockwise. So suddenly you could spot tornadoes. The Murfreesboro tornado, the Good Friday tornado we had years ago, I used to show that at AMS conventions when I was asked to talk about that. And I just showed just a blob of rain and showers and storms. And in the middle of it, here's this couplet. And that was a monster tornado. It's a shame the mother and the baby died in that, but it's amazing that we didn't have more people die.
Oh, yeah. My wife and children were in a big lots. They put them all the way. I'm sitting on my deck at home in Smyrna, 20 miles away, the sun's shining. Mm-hmm. And then they're freaking out because they've been sequestered. Yeah, I remember that day because wanted to drive in, but they wouldn't let you in.
I would venture to say that if we did not have the NexRed Doppler radar system, there probably would not have been a tornado warning for that. Unless, of course, there were some people, if you visually spotted it, okay? It was a daytime tornado, luckily. So, and there were people that had spotted a funnel cloud coming from, coming across southern Williamson County, coming down Highway 96 towards Murfreesboro, okay, from west to east. And as a matter of fact, you've seen us on Channel 2, Justin Bruce, who works in Las Vegas now. Lisa Patton and I were doing the play-by-play on the radar, and he was free looking at cameras. And he pulled up the Murfreesboro cameras and saw the guy at Old Fort Pike had taken the camera off the interstate and was looking back towards the west. up 96 coming from the west. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, here comes this funnel cloud. And it touches down, and he goes, and we don't need, Lisa and I are just blah, 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 blah. And he calls the producer and said, hey, take this camera, take this camera. So they double box it, where you have the radar on the left and that on the right. And he goes, Davis and Lisa, check out the camera. We looked up, and holy. Mm-hmm. And then we naturally watched that cross the interstate. So now, in that case, there might have been a tornado warning simply because it had been visually spotted. Okay, but on radar, you never would have seen it without that red next to the green, you know, in this blob of thunderstorms, okay? So the next red Doppler radar just changed the world to being able to spot tornadoes, which, of course, along with snow, are the two things that we go crazy about.
Ice, here. Snow,
yeah,
yep.
And tornadoes. You know, that's, you know, that's our big thing. If you were in the Gulf Coast, it'd be hurricanes, you know, in New Orleans where I'm from. But so it just changed our world. And at the same time, the computers had come along, and a company called Barron out of northern Alabama in Huntsville, old man Barron, Bob Barron is his name, he had the vision. He was a weekend weather guy in Huntsville. He said, wait a minute, we've got these new computer things that can zoom in on streets, and can we take this new high-resolution radar data and plot it on the map and use computers to zoom into it and, you know, show it on TV like it's never been showed before instead of this one thing, or maybe zoom into a quadrant or something, you know. And so he hired some engineers, and they put that together, and sure enough, he came up with the very first system to be able to show what you see all every day on every TV station now when there's a tornado warning. And there's like dozens of companies that do the same thing now, but he was the first, and we at Channel 2 were the first to get it. Lisa Patton and I were working together, the Nashville tornado 98, we had just gotten it less than a year, 6 months earlier we'd gotten that system. And you know, you were able to do things that we'd never been able to do before. And so that next red Doppler radar, along with computers being able to show that information on TV in a easy to, you know, read fashion, if the person on the air explains it well enough, changed the world when it came to severe weather. And not just tornadoes, but other forms of severe weather as well. Hail, you know, even just an average July and August afternoon thunderstorm. They watch the thing build up and build up to build up to, like, you know, thousands of feet up, and then they say that's about to collapse, so they'll put out a warning and boom, it collapses, and you get a big microburst at the surface and there's strong winds. So that next red Doppler radar just changed everything, and it's the biggest thing for severe weather. Now, computer modeling of the atmosphere allowed us to start doing a 7-day forecast, which still, And I'll get to this in a second, why can't we do it better than that with computer models? But computer models gave you at least enough information where you could take a stab at doing forecasts more than a day or two, okay? And one thing people say, well, you know, how come with all these computer models, you still be wrong, especially when you go out past 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, 6 days, 7 days? We call it voodoo land if you go past that, right? Anybody that's going past seven.
Voodoo land, is that from your New Orleans heritage?
Well, actually, James Spann in Birmingham, Alabama, okay, who's a famous weather guy. You probably know who he is. Everybody knows James. He's the first person I heard use that term for trying to forecast out too far.
Yeah.
But the big thing that goes into those computer models, I'm changing to the forecast, making a 7-day forecast. The big thing that goes into those computer models, besides the surface data, where National Weather Service stations all around the country and around the world send out that weather data, you know, and you put it in there. But that's just the surface. The surface is all controlled by the jet stream and what's going on aloft. So the weather balloons that we send up all around the country, okay, we send up these weather balloons. That's the most important data, that along with the surface data, to really give you an idea of what the atmosphere is doing to model it into the future, 12 hours, 24 hours, 36 hours, 48 hours, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, 5 days. So why isn't it better than it is? Okay, because it's pretty good. I mean, compared to what I used to know when there was no such thing. But still, why isn't it as good? Well, think about this. Where do they send up weather balloons? Well, the United States, Canada, we're pretty good at it. Much of Europe is pretty good at it. You know, then we get into other countries that don't send any at all. And guess what? The Atlantic and the Pacific Ocean are huge. Are there any weather balloons going up out there? Yeah. Not many. There might be a few. So anyway, what I'm trying to say is that the data going into the computer model is so sparse, you know, on this huge Earth of ours, that my theory is if it was possible to send up a weather balloon every square mile of the Earth, I'm talking about every square mile of the Earth. You wouldn't be able to fly an airplane, obviously. Every hour, okay, a weather balloon, every square mile of the Earth, taking that much data and plugging in a computer model that's changing every hour with that data. We've got computer models that change every hour, but they don't have – the weather balloons still go up every 12 hours, okay, unless they do a special ob. If they could do that, these computer models might be close to being pretty perfect. Now, granted, going out 4, 5, 7 days, it might still drop off a little bit in accuracy, but it would be huge. So, 'cause they'll say that meteorology isn't an exact science. Well, mathematics is, okay? But we're trying to project the resolution of what we're trying to do. These weather balloons are only in parts of the Earth, and they're 300 miles apart. Like the next one from us is up in northern Kentucky around Louisville. The next one's down Centerville, Alabama, Little Rock, Arkansas, Athens, Georgia, I believe, or it's not Athens, but another one in northern Georgia. So they're far apart, and then you don't have them over the oceans. And if you had that much data that often, you could probably model the atmosphere close to perfectly, and it would be an exact science.
Could you repeat all that, please?
Sorry.
That's okay. It's the easiest show I've ever done. Davis Nolan is our guest. 44 years, the meteorologist, and a great guy. Everybody loves Davis. We'll wrap it up here on 94.9 The Fan in just a few. It's 101 with Greg Pogue, presented by Freeman Webb, Roy's Meat Service, East Nashville, Jake Steigelfest, back at the 94.9 The Fan studio. As Chase McCabe says on the ones and twos, I still don't know what that means. Davis Nolan has been our guest. What are you doing today? You still, you are a meteorology consulting business. Mm-hmm. So what are you doing today?
You're talking about literally Saturday afternoon? Or talking
in
about,
general,
yeah,
both.
That's what I figured. I'm going home to finish mowing my lawn this afternoon.
Okay, good.
But no, as far as my biggest thing that I'm doing right now is I'm still very active in social media, as we talked about.
Right.
Now, I do have Davis Nolan Consulting Meteorologist, LLC, which is most of what you get nowadays with that is court cases where there's a...
Really?
Yeah, there's a lawsuit over a building that was damaged, and they want to know how strong the winds were. Because if the winds were not... You know, the building was built to withstand X. If it's more than X, this insurance pays. And if it's less than X, this insurance company pays.
Yeah.
You know, and they need to know. There are a lot of them. There are some that are, what do you call it, injury, you know, the injury type situations in there. I don't advertise that. And if somebody calls me, I usually, if I like the case, I'll take it. Okay. And but I'll probably only do a couple of those a year. I've had a couple of years where I did 4 or 5 of them. But, you know, and I have friends of mine who advertise it and really go after it, because you can get with these companies that are expert witness. They get you in touch with lawyers. They really have these lists. And I've avoided that. They call me and said, do you want to be on our list? You pay them to get on this list. And
yeah, you give them a commission, finder's fee, right?
Yeah. And they'll or sometimes it's the other way around. The company pays them to get on their list. And some of them are really good.
Yeah.
But I was working at Channel 2, and I figured I can't take on that much business. And right now, with all the traveling I'm doing with my wife in Japan and my brother in Pensacola, you know, I still do a case, but I don't want to take on 3 or 4 of them at one time. And you could do that, okay? I have a friend of mine who, after he graduated from Florida State with me and worked in Tampa with me as well, and he, after Hurricane Sandy, we did some consulting for a company for up in the Northeast, and that blew up on him. He ended up getting so much work, he's still making a living out of that, doing that.
Wow.
Right now, like a lot of court cases. So most of it's that.
Fishing? Where are you going fishing?
Well, oddly enough, I live on Old Hickory Lake, and I haven't, since I've been retired, other than walking down to my dock and fishing, I haven't fished on Old Hickory Lake on my boat. I will, don't get me wrong. Okay, I've been to Pensacola to help my brother out, and I went out catching... red snapper was out of season, but we catch the vermilion snapper or the mingo snapper, which are like, I call them miniature red snapper. They're about the size of crappie. They look just like a red snapper to me, but they're not as big.
Mango snapper.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And got to go with a guy. One of my brother's friends takes me out to do that. And also off of the Fort Pickens Spear, caught some Spanish mackerel while I was down there. And then right off the beach Gulf Breeze, I caught a nice redfish and a speckled trout back-to-back cast.
Yeah. You know, Cedar Creek Marina, you know where that is, right?
Yes.
In that, if you go down in where it sort of ends, like when you come out, shell crackers.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like fish in a barrel. They're in those.
Yeah.
You can look down there and just, yeah.
They're like big bluegill, and they fight really hard.
Yeah.
And they're fun. They're lots of fun.
We could do a whole show on that. Yeah, I guess you know, with Bill Hall, right, mm-hmm. and everything, your contemporaries all the way through, and I've talked to Hope Hines and Rudy Kalis, okay? They were competitors but friends. Mm-hmm. There's no – doesn't seem like there's that kind of competition within mm-hmm. the meteorology world, station to station.
Right.
It doesn't seem like I'm trying to beat you.
Yeah.
You seem like you're trying to beat the weather.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, we all do the same thing, and Bill was such a friendly guy.
Yeah.
You know, I remember meeting him out in the water one time. I was below Cheatham Dam, and he went out of his
surprise
way.
There.
Yeah, he went out of his way to troll over. We were all trying to pull our boats out, you know, and he went out of his way. He probably got out of line, you know, because it was wintertime. There was sauger fishing. There was, like, dozens of boats on a weekend when it was sunny. And there were dozens of boats. He probably got out of his line just to troll over to me. Hey, Davis, how you doing? Da-da-da-da. And shoot the bull with me for a few minutes, you know, before.
I've actually sauger fished right below Cordell Hell Dam. Okay. Right there. Yeah. It's crazy.
And, yeah, well, that going upstream, you know, on Old Hickory Lake, mm-hmm. you know, you get from Lebanon 231 north eastward. That's where the sauger fishing gets good.
Five words. Describe your career in five words. And they don't have to be a sentence.
Interesting and lots of fun.
There you go, five. I look at yeah, interesting.
I didn't
and
realize.
Lots of,
I'm lucky I didn't.
I would have said five of you know. The you know. Anyway, thanks for doing this, man.
Thank you.
Great. Hey, congratulations. What a run! And you're still running. That's the cool thing about it, right?
Yes.
Thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
All right, hey Jake, Stackerfest, great job by you. Davis Nolan's been our guest. Enjoy the rest of your weekend right here, and keep it on 94.9 The Fan.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.